From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, overlooking dozens of golf courses that will never have us as members, this is the Golf Digest Podcast. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today we're going to talk a little gambling. I am going to be joined by Jeff Sherman, who is the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook manager and golf odds maker. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his job, how he sets the lines, maybe some mistakes that the average gambler makes that you can avoid, in particular for the upcoming British Open. So without further ado, here is my chat with Jeff Sherman. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today I am joined by Jeff Sherman, who is the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook manager and golf odds maker. Now, Jeff, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, first off, how does someone get to be in your position? Maybe just take, I'm sure, you know, listeners will be interested to see how you got to, you know, your job occupation.
Yeah, it's a long route to get there. generally, in Las Vegas, you need to start out as a ticket teller and learn the ropes that way. You don't just jump into a supervisor spot and make the odds as, you know, the glamorous part of what everyone wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I got my start back in 1993 at the Imperial Palace, just wanting to learn the business while I was getting my MBA at UNLV. And I was fortunate enough to get with a crew that fostered learning how to make odds. So one of the responsibilities they put me in charge was learning golf odds, and they had been doing it for some time, but they wanted to pass that along to myself. And so I was a teller for a couple years, and while I was a teller, I was learning the odds process. When I was promoted to supervisor, then I started actually putting the odds out myself once they had confidence in me, where they could see what I knew I was, what I was doing. And I've been doing it ever since. So it's been going on 20 years. I've been at four different properties, and you just have to work your way up the ranks to get to that point. And it's a select few in Las Vegas right now that have the ability to make the odds, because most of the books out there, there's a few independent ones, and there's a lot of satellited books out where there's, like, MGM Mirage, for example, has one hub with a lot of satellite books. So. We here at the Westgate are our own entity, our own property, and we're responsible for our own odds, and that's where I put the odds up at.
So how does the Westgate figure into the whole Vegas landscape then? You mentioned there's just a few, you know, like how do you work with other different casinos, or how does that work?
No, I work with the Westgate.
Just Westgate.
I'm at
okay.
the Westgate, and there's a crew of us here that run the sports book and are responsible for the odds, and we put up what we want, and we try to be unique and different than what is out there on the market or at other shops. So when I do the golf odds, for instance, I can be as creative as I want with either matchups or propositions and put up things that you won't find at other properties.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we try to differentiate ourselves here, and we do it more than just golf, but on football, basketball, we do propositions. You know, we're the first ones up with NBA season wins. I put a lot of input into things like that. But we try to differentiate ourselves, and golf is one way that I've been trying to do it.
Now, what was your golf background before you started to get into the golf odds? Did you like the game? Did you know a lot about it, or what was that?
I really didn't follow it too closely. It was just something that landed in my lap when I was at the Imperial Palace, and they wanted me to learn about it. So I learned and saw the odds-making process come into play with it. And now, over the years, I've grown for such an appreciation of it that I'm a huge fan of it. And, you know, I've got my wife watching golf now, when she said she never would. So it's really rubbed off on other people, too. So. I know all the golfers on all the tours. You know, I'm familiar with them so well, and their stats and just their personalities with it. That I love golf now, and it's one of my favorite sports to book and be involved with, along with soccer.
Now, how does golf stack up to other sports in terms of being difficult to handicap? Obviously, it seems like for a gambler's perspective, it's one of the most difficult to bet on, just because there's so many people in the field, and basically everyone has a chance each week on the PGA Tour. We just saw, you know, Billy Hurley, the 600th ranked player in the world, win last week. How for you though? How does it compare to other sports when it comes to doing your job?
Well, as far as making the odds, it's not too difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, I structure based on power ratings and my perception on who people are looking to wager on that week. From the other side of the counter, for people handicapping betting it, it is one of the more difficult ones, mm-hmm. when you have to choose the one guy who's going to win the tournament.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's other markets involved. Like I had mentioned, the matchup mm-hmm. wagering, where mm-hmm. you just need to have one guy beat one other guy instead of a whole field of 150 guys.
Right.
And so it's really two different markets in play there, and we tend to see the sharp players get more involved in the matchups and the propositions, and just the general public get more involved in the odds to win outright that pays a longer price.
Okay, so now you're setting the odds for a weekly tournament. What's kind of your checklist, I guess, that you go through when you're coming out with your lines each week?
Well, I start with the entry list of the golfers, and I basically rank them based in relation to the field and kind of have an idea where I want to start with as far as their odds go. Then I look at the statistics based on course form and current form, and those are really the two strong leading indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start putting the odds together and fine-tuning it based on that. Then you just read course previews, or, you know, since these courses go through the rotation each year, you kind of know who suits better on each course, and what the statistics, whether it's greens and regulation or driving statistics, putting, whatnot, and then you go in depth even more and fine tune it based on that. But the two leading indicators are current form and course form. And when I make matchups together, you really want to find guys that are playing similar like that. So it's a strong starting point to use those, and then, like I said, then you can just take it to another level and fine-tune it based on other factors.
Do you have an actual – you mentioned those two top factors. Do you have an actual formula where you kind of just plug in these numbers and it spits out kind of a ranking, or is it not that simple?
No, I basically rank the golfers off the top of my head when I'm looking at a field in relation to the other ones, and then I dig into the statistics and kind of fine-tune it and come up with my order. I basically like to break them down into segments, like these guys are in the A group, these guys are in the B group, these guys are in the C group. And that way, after I compile the odds and you find guys 25 to 30 to 1 might be the B group, it's really easy to make the matchups off of that, and then you just really fine-tune it with a price on the matchups.
Now, in general, you mentioned that the sharps like to play the matchups a little more than the average gambler. What is that maybe the biggest mistake the average gambler makes, is that they're trying to swing for the fences and hit on a winner?
Well, that's exactly it. They're looking at the guy that they want to get the guy 40 to 1 where they can bet $10 to win 400,
right,
and they're really not interested in betting, you know, $11 to win 10,
mm-hmm.
even though that's a lot more in their favor just to beat that one individual, and in the long run they'll do better that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they like to go for the, you know, spread their money out on four or five long shots and take their chances. And you know, the other thing you have to look at when the bettor is handicapping this, the hold percentage on our future book, we try to shoot for around 25%, which is very fair amongst industry standards, where when you look at a matchup, it's 4.5% generally. So it's just so much easier to beat versus the book if you're looking at betting the matchups versus the odds to win. But just the general public, they just want to get the big score real quick.
Right. And the general public, would you know, in terms of who they bet on, they're probably inclined to go with the bigger name guys. And is the value less on those bets when you're betting on, you know, a Jason Day or Rory McIlroy? I mean, are you getting kind of worse odds, or is it kind of the same across the board?
Well, we see where the money is anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody like Jordan Spieth, he's been one of our more popular golfers over the last couple of years with his run of success, and we know that we're going to get an extra support of money on someone like him. Now, lately, with everything Jason Day has been doing, he's been the one. So when we're coming up to the British Open, I had to start Jason Day as the favorite to win that, and already we've seen some liability on him at 7-1.
Hmm.
So you just have to be a little anticipatory when you're doing this, where the money might fall. Myself, if I was handicapping this, I wouldn't bet anyone less than 10-1. I would at least need double digits, no matter how how well they are in a major like that. But we know where the money's going to come, and we just adjust accordingly.
Yeah, so that's a reminds me of a question. In a typical, like a football matchup, let's say the line is 7 points. Now, is that line, I've heard different people say different things. Is that line set so you're trying to get kind of a 50-50 bet on both sides? Or is it really the true line of the difference between the two teams?
Oh, it's really set where when we put this out that we are going to split people's perception.
Split it, right.
Based on that number.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to do. But then once that number's up and you start taking wagers and the line moves, then it's basically we want to see who is betting into this.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I mentioned with the two different markets, in the outright market and the matchups market, we'll be a lot more aggressively moving a matchup price that's bet by a sharp than an outright price that's bet by somebody that's just recreationally gambling.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Jordan Spieth being an obvious pick on Jason Day, of course. Now, I know you told me and you told everybody for the at the U.S. Open that Brandon Grace, of all people, obviously he's a great player in his own right, but not maybe one of the more sexy names, that he had a big backing, that he was maybe your biggest liability. I wonder, are there any other names like that that you've seen pop up that are kind of sneaky, backed really big in during the majors, at least, or during tournaments?
It's not on a consistent basis.
Okay.
We just see you know, a larger amounts of support on certain individuals based on the form they're coming in with. I know one of our larger liabilities leading up to the British Open right now is Jim Furyk. We took some money on him at 60-1 and 40-1, and he currently sits at 40.
Okay.
But he's been a little bit unusual as far as a larger amount of early support on him at this time. Other than that, Jason Day is getting it. Like I had mentioned, he's going to get it, being as popular as he is.
Right.
But a little right now, Furyk is the only one in regards to the British Open. And it really just depends on the tournament. Week in and week out, we see different golfers supported. We're seeing some on Jason Duffner this week at the WGC Bridgestone. And a lot of that has to do with his play on the course. But it's just, it depends on the golfer and who people are looking for that week based on the form that they're in.
Now, how, I wonder, you know, obviously there's been so much talk in the last few years about some of these daily fantasy sites that have popped up, and they've become popular with golf. I know the DraftKings does the $1 million. You can win $1 million, obviously. I wonder, has that affected the Vegas landscape at all in terms of the total number of bets you guys are taking at any of these events?
It really hasn't. It's
okay.
What we do with the golf odds on a weekly basis, it's basically driven by, and it's like this for all sports, is the amount of TV coverage and TV exposure, and that translates into a better wagering handle for us. And so the more people are inclined to watch the European Tour early in the morning, to the PGA events later in the day, we see our European Tour action picking up steadily over time, just because of the TV exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And people just, it's just becoming more popular each year. And I've seen our Masters handle reach record heights each year. Same thing with the U.S. Open this year. And DFS isn't really having any type of negative effect on what our betting handle is.
Hmm. Now, from your perspective, how much pressure do you feel once a big event, especially a big event, starts, and you've set these odds, and now obviously you're not, you know, you're trying not to lose Westgate a bunch of money and everything else. How much pressure is on you once you set these lines?
Well, it's just you have to be constantly keeping up with it and not neglect anything, and we don't do that on any sports that we offer. And as long as we're making adjustments, you know, some books, they like to put their odds up, and when they take bets, they lower guys. You know, we're really big on if we take bets and lower, we want to raise someone and keep that theoretical hold percentage around the same and offer fair value to people. So if we're not seeing support for one golfer, then I'll I'll bump them up till the point that I might see some support. And when you do that, especially on these majors, we write such a large amount on the majors, just for the U.S. Open, for example, out of a field of 156 golfers, we had seven golfers we had liability on, and we won on all the rest. So if you can spread the money and the support out that well, you know, that's all we can do with our job.
Maybe just explain that a little better to the listeners. Out of the 156 guys, seven players you had liability on, meaning you would have lost money if any of those seven had won?
Correct. We would have lost if any of those seven had won, and at the same time, if any of the other 149 had won, we would have showed a positive result for the book.
Okay. And so now how did Dustin Johnson play into that? He was probably one of your bigger, more popular picks.
He was one of the more popular picks. He was our leader in ticket count.
Okay.
But not money wagered.
Okay.
So he was a good result for us, even though he was the most popular pick by the general public. But it was basically a lot of smaller tickets, like $10 and $20 tickets, and nothing overwhelming that would have put ourselves in a liability position.
Interesting. What is there a tournament that you recall where you guys did get burned by a certain guy winning, or maybe back to the Tiger Woods days where everybody just bet him and he just kept winning? Or was there any scenario like that, nightmare scenario?
Well, during Tiger's days, his odds were so low that even when he did win, you can overcome that type of liability quickly by riding on other golfers. So it wasn't, I'd say over the last few years, until maybe the last couple years where Tiger, has been missing some time, he's been one of our larger liabilities. He was in the Masters 2 years ago. He was the largest liability that I've seen of any golf tournament in the last few years. Now, obviously, he didn't end up winning. That's when he missed some time leading up to it, when he finished 17th, I believe, after he pulled out from Torrey Pines when he was having his issues.
Right.
But other than that, we've had some that we've lost on. Sure, I couldn't bring you a specific example.
Okay.
Somebody hits, they throw a few $100 and they hit somebody at 40, 50 to 1. That happens time and time again. But we just have to look at it from a long run perspective. And like I said, when you get to the majors and you can write so much handle that you're in such a good position and win on most of the guys, you just carry that through, and it's a long run process. And just like any other sport, players are going to win, and the books are there to look at the long run process of it.
Now, what's the setting like for you? Is there kind of a room where you and all the other odds handicappers are in there, and you're kind of watching these events together? Or is there anything like that? Or, just a room where, you mentioned you have an MBA. A lot of, we're talking some really smart people who are coming up with these lines. Are you guys all kind of like hanging out and rubbing off on each other? Or what's the vibe there?
Well, we have a back office that we have our computers set up, and a few of us have some workstations on. And usually we work on our own events. I do golf on my own here. We got another individual that does NASCAR odds, and a few others that do soccer and such. And then we talk on bigger events, and if we're doing events live wagering and things like that, then we'll have some communication on what's going on with it. Or if we just seek out input. I know, like, when you get to NFL and football season, we do propositions. We have a handful, like four or five of us, that make prop numbers and put it all together to come up with it. We're the first one that releases our following week NFL lines at 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Sundays. So, again, we'll have our set of odds makers make our own numbers and put together a consensus and release that number. So there's communication like that, and there's also the same time that we have the niche sports that we'll do on our own. But we have a room that we hash this stuff out with all the resources of the Internet and the TVs above us and any information we can gather. We're big with Twitter usage too.
Sure. And I'm looking at the British Open odds here, and I'm wondering, sometimes you'll see a field bet. It doesn't seem like you guys do that as much. Do you try to assign an odd to every player in the field each week?
Well, that's something new I've been trying to do with our new operating system that we have. And on a weekly basis, I use 49 golfers and a field option. Just because you have, look at this week with the Barracuda Championship in Reno. We've had multiple players withdraw, and then they're replaced by multiple players. So I don't want to have to keep up on that every second and have to add and subtract players all the time. So it's easier with a field option on a weekly basis. But now with the majors, I want to have every single golfer listed during the major, because generally the public wants to get a ticket that has that golfer's name on it that they're looking for,
mm-hmm.
and they're less inclined to say if there's somebody they're looking for and he's in the field, they're either going to bet less or they might just not bet that option at all.
Sure.
So the more often than not that I can list every golfer in the field, it's more beneficial to our book.
Sure. Do you anticipate taking any bets on, let me see here, either Nick Faldo, Ian Baker Finch, or Sandy Lyle? They're all listed as 2,000 to 1 odds.
We always do. There's always $5 or $10 on them. And we had a for the U.S. Open. We had the same type of a scenario, and we had tickets all the way through the field on it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I can't say anything because I remember last year I put a few pounds on John Daly. I see him here at 500 to 1. So might have to do that again. What now I'm wondering here, when you do any of these odds, what would you say is the kind of the breaking point of someone having a decent chance of winning versus really not having a chance? Is it 100 to 1? Is that kind of the thinking there, or is there anything that goes into that?
Well, in this day and age, you see long shots come in all the time. It's mm-hmm. just the odds are reflective of how hard it is to actually pick that individual out. But when I'm looking myself through the list, I'm trying to find guys maybe like 40 or 50 to 1 or less,
mm-hmm.
where you can find a few of those guys having a more realistic shot and still offering some value at the same time. And so I know I do a weekly radio show out here, and we discuss golf, and generally the guys that I'm looking for kind of in that range, like 25, 30, 40 to 1, you know, I shy away from the guys that are, you know, 15 to 1 or less more
mm-hmm.
often than
mm-hmm.
not. And then when you get beyond that, then it's, you know, throwing darts, and once in a while I'll have some guys 100, 150 to 1, but it's, you know, not realistic on the expectation standpoint.
Sure. Now, obviously, Tiger is still listed here, 100 to 1. You know, it's pretty, you know, if you bet on Tiger and he doesn't play, that's a no bet, right?
Correct. You would get a refund if he does not tee off.
Okay. So that's, I know a lot of people always ask that. Looking ahead at the British Open, I know obviously you've set these odds. I know you want your book to make some money, but who are some, you know, as a golf fan yourself, who are some of the guys that you would be inclined to maybe put a few pounds on, let's say, heading into the British?
Well, one of my guys that I've been doing it consistently throughout the year, and I actually like this week too, is Brooks Koepka.
Mm.
And he's in that range of around 40 or 50 to 1 that I think is going to be sooner than later that he's going to break through with a win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been in position a couple times this year where he easily could have won, and he's faltered on Sunday.
Yep.
But, you know, if he can take learning experience through that, you know, he's paying a nice price off that. You know, somebody that I'm looking for in matchups that I would shy away from the odds to win, but I love Sergio Garcia.
Mm.
You know, he's got a fabulous British history. He can play in those type of conditions, but he's more apt to be near the top. And,
right.
you know, from somebody that admitted at one time that he didn't see himself ever winning a major, it's hard for me to support him to actually win the major. But I think you can find the value in a matchup standpoint on someone like that.
That's right. What now, other than the matchups, do you guys offer the, you know, this someone will make a hole in one or this kind of stuff, or do you keep it to kind of the matchups and obviously the to win bets?
Well, it's outright and matchups on a weekly basis, just because we're doing what's driven by our demand.
Right.
And then when we get to the majors, that's when we involve a lot of the propositions, mm-hmm. the hole in one, finish positions by players, where will a golfer make the cut.
Right.
Simple things like that are very popular. And, you know, as long as they keep attracting action, we'll keep pushing for that. But we keep that restricted to the four majors.
Okay. And at the four majors, what's kind of the breakdown of the money you take in on those different types of bets? Like, is the to win bet still the most popular, or how does that breakdown work for you guys?
Yeah, it would probably be about 75% of our handle is on the outright market,
mm-hmm.
and the other 25% of the handle is based on the matchups and propositions combined.
Okay. And now what percentage of your books, how does golf figure in the landscape of your book? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Is it, you know, maybe what kind of, obviously football is king, but where does golf kind of fit in?
Well, it's definitely growing. It's growing at a nice pace, as long with some of the other ancillary sports are too. I mean, basically overall, all wagering is growing at a nice pace.
Mm-hmm.
But in relation to the other ones, it's way down the pecking order. We have, you know, the different types of football between NFL and college. NBA is very popular, college basketball. So then you start getting down to the golf, the NASCAR, and it is a small percentage for the book, but it's a very meaningful one, because when you offer all these things and the more options, you're getting people to come and place their wagers on all the different sports at your one establishment. And that's really the idea behind it, is to cater and be able to satisfy the demand for every type of person making a wager. And so the more that we can do, the more that we keep them satisfied with what we offer.
Great. Well, anyway, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you know, the listeners are going to be very interested, and hopefully they can check out your website, and that's golfodds.com. It's pretty easy for everybody to remember. And check out Jeff on Twitter as well, at golfodds. Jeff, thanks a lot. Enjoy the British Open. Good luck to you guys, and I guess good luck to everybody else out there listening who might be throwing a few pounds down on everybody. Thank you for joining us.
And thanks a lot for having me on.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care. Thanks again to Jeff Sherman for joining us today, and thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to us on iTunes and come back next week to see who our guest is.